Okay, how many daily Bible readers do we got? That's pretty good percentage. Okay, Revelation chapter 20. Now, last week we looked at 5b and 6. The first resurrection, and blessed and holy is he that has part in the first resurrection. On such the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. It's actually, there's so much involved and so many details here.
Where are we at?
Revelation 20, verse 6. This is those that have the first resurrection. What was the first resurrection?
Say that again.
What's the first resurrection here? We discussed that last week.
Dying, being raised.
No.
Baptism.
Christ rose, but we have to take part in his resurrection. Right. Okay? And so as you look at this, because the ones that take part in the first resurrection, the second death has no power. Now, and of course, I try to not drag things out, but there's so many things involved in these verses that it's awful hard not to. What are those that take part in the first resurrection who don't have, the second death has no power, what are they going to be? Mm-mm. Read the verse. You know me. I know I'm kind of ornery, but...
20 what?
20 and verse 6.
Blessed and holy is he who has part in the first resurrection. Over such, the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years.
So what are they going to be?
Priests. But they won't be in heaven?
Not for the 1,000 years.
They'll stay back and be the priests to the people that are left on earth.
Well, now what was the role of the priest in the Old Testament?
To approach the throne of God, to offer pure worship to him.
Right. Okay. It was the priests were the only ones that could approach God. What's that?
In the Old.
Yeah, under the Old Testament law. The priests were the only ones. Everybody else had to stay away. All right? They could bring their offerings, but the priests brought their offerings to God. All right? Now, the difference that we see in the Old and the New is the Levites were the only ones that were able to deal with the sacrifices, and the high priest was the one that carried those into the holy place. And so, in the New Testament, who is the priest?
We.
Who's we?
Christians.
Okay, and they did what? How did they become that?
They were baptized.
They took part in that first resurrection. And so, it's those that are baptized for the remission of sins that are the priests. They're the only ones that can approach God.
Okay, so this time period... Christ hasn't come back yet.
Right.
And they're still alive. They haven't died.
Right. Read verse 6 and 7 and to catch the context there.
Blessed and holy is he who has part in the first resurrection. Over such the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. Now, when the 1,000 years have expired, Satan will be released from his prison.
Okay. So, I mean, we could have added 6 in that or 5 in that. But the thing is, we're talking about the period of time that the 1,000 years is in existence. Okay? And so we'll get into the once they expire in a little bit. Okay? But notice that we are living in the 1,000-year reign. Okay? We take part in that first resurrection. By taking part in that first resurrection, we become, number one, what?
Priests.
We're priests of God. We have the opportunity to go into the not the Holy of Holies, but into heaven itself. All right? But we're not the high priest, are we?
No.
Who's Jesus. The high priest?
Jesus.
So we've got to go through Jesus. Okay? The high priest was the only one in the Old Testament that could actually go into the presence of God in the Holy of Holies, or the most holy place.
This brings an excellent point, because he's the only mediator between God and man.
Right. And so that's where, you know, you can't get to God unless you go through Jesus. Okay? And nowadays, and you know, the idea is talking to Jesus and asking Jesus for everything. Jesus said, don't do that. He said, don't ask me anything. Because, see, he's the high priest. So we go through him to get to God. He said, ask the Father. Okay? And so, these signs point to teachings within the Bible that we need to see. Okay? And that's the reason, as we look at, you know, I'm trying to teach and to go through this, when we look at it the way God says, that there's so many things that we need to deal with. Okay? And so we are priests. As a baptized believer. Alright? What else? What is the state of the priest?
The second death has no power.
Okay, but beyond that, there's another deal.
We will reign with him?
Reign. We are reigning with Christ and God during that 1,000-year reign. Okay? There's other passages that bring this in, but we are actually reigning with Christ. What is Christ? He is our elder brother. Okay? And so, in essence, we are... We're reigning with him, all right? And I think we've got to try to keep these things in proper perspective, but we are part of that kingdom. Mm-hmm. And Christ is the king. We are brothers of the king, and that puts us as reigning with Christ. Now, we don't make the decisions. We don't make the rules. We follow the king's rules, but we're reigning with him.
I seem to remember there's a verse that says we are fellow laborers with him in his kingdom. So in that aspect, we are raised to be like him, because we are, in essence, doing his work.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, I think it's good to see the pictures of these things, because these point to other teachings within the New Testament. And if we don't keep them in the proper context of the New Testament, we do as many did, and so they go crazy on these things, and they make them to mean things that the New Testament doesn't teach. And so we've got to keep them in the context of the New Testament. Okay? All right. So, let me see if I had anything else there. We'll get to verse 14 a little later. I have some notes to refer down to there. Okay, so somebody read now verse 7.
Now when the 1,000 years have expired, Satan will be released from his prison.
Okay, now I want you to tell me when Satan is going to be released from his prison.
Of the 1,000 years.
When Jesus comes back.
I don't know.
There's one word there that helps us to see a little bit about this. I think this is an area where we could get into a lot of speculation. I'm not real sure that we will really understand this in this world, because notice that the 1,000 years are what?
Expired.
They're expired. They're over. The reign of Christ
And this verse has always really scared me because I think, well, he's at work now. What about when he's released? I mean, what do we
But the 1,000 years are expired.
Well, that's what I thought. They would expired.
Okay, now the thing is, how long does Christ reign?
1,000 years.
1,000 years. And it's the judgment where Christ gives back the throne to God. Now, I've looked at a couple different possibilities on this. I've kind of studied one that doesn't really fit to me, but it's possible. I don't really think so. And the you know, when it doesn't fit because Christ reigns for the 1,000 years. And so there's one thinking that puts this while the earth is still, things are still going on, seed time and harvest. And the theory is there that there are no longer anybody that's following God. And Satan goes out and deceives the nations. Well, they're already his servants. They just don't think so.
Right.
And so he has nobody left to deceive. I struggle with that. And so I'm just filling you in. There's some things that I don't understand here. I really believe that since the 1,000 years are expired, that Christ is no longer reigning. He's given the throne back to God. And this is something that takes place in the spiritual realm at the judgment day. But you'll notice that there's really, it's no concern as we look at the whole context. Either way, if you look at either of those, as long as you stay faithful, you wouldn't even have to worry about this lasting in the existence of your day, right? Because the idea there is the 1,000 years reigning. So reigning in that context, if they would think about that, would say, okay, well, if there's nobody here to reign over, he's not reigning anymore. I look at Noah. When did God destroy the world? What's that? I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
In the beginning.
Thinking about Noah. When did God destroy the world?
After the boat was built.
After the boat was filled.
After everyone was so wicked, there was no one righteous left but one family.
There was nobody else that was faithful, okay? And all of those things, they brought in some thinking. But the key that I'm trying to pull out from that is, when there was no hope, God destroyed it. Now, let me tell you something. Don't you get complacent. Because he can come today. I'm giving you an opinion, and my opinion doesn't hold any weight. Does that make sense? Because he could easily come today before this lesson is finished. And so don't you get to thinking, well, I don't have to worry about it.
Because the earth is not that wicked yet.
Yeah, the earth is not that wicked yet, but that doesn't mean. I'll tell you what, it's pretty wicked.
It is pretty wicked. Is it because there's more people that it's not as wicked as it was back then? Do you see what I'm saying?
You know what's interesting about that is I've seen Brad Harrib carry out the scenario of the population of the earth. There was a lot of people on the face of the earth when the earth was destroyed. I mean, you know, they were living close to 1,000 years. As you look at the population, how population grows, and you know, it's like Adam and Eve, it talks about 3 children, but it said they had other sons and daughters. Okay? And so these people were having large families, and so they were multiplying quite fast. And so I can't remember the figures, but it was over 1 billion people, I think, that at that time of the flood. So we're talking a massive amount of people. And so I don't think that the population, sure, I think the more population we get, the more evil influence is there, because many are lost and few are saved. But here we're just talking about this, and all these ideas I think are good to bring up and discuss them. But we got to remember that whatever conclusion we reach, it doesn't disagree with something in the Bible. All right? And that's why, you know, as I study some of these things in Revelation, I'm going back to the New Testament to say what agrees there. That's why, in my opinion, it says when the 1,000 years are expired, that's the time that Christ comes back. He's no longer reigning. And so there is for us something that happens in the spiritual realm. Okay? Now there again, we're talking opinion because I can't find any scripture that really gives me a concrete idea. Like when it says, talks about we're priests to God, I can go back into the New Testament and see that. When it talks about the first resurrection, you know, that is so clear as you go back and look at the teaching of the New Testament. That's baptism for the remission of sins. That's all that is. You cannot get away from that if you interpret it in the light of the New Testament. Okay? And so, some things like this, we really can't really figure out. But I want us to note verses 8 to 9 in the context of Satan being loosed out of his prison at the expiration of the 1,000 years. So somebody read those.
"And will go out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, whose number is as the sand of the sea. They went up on the breadth of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city. And fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them."
Okay, so let's talk about this battle a little bit. Okay, Satan is released, and what does he do? He goes out to deceive. Okay? I wonder, and I look at that go out to deceive. They're already deceived. they've already are his followers. Okay? Where are these nations which he goes out to deceive?
Four corners of the earth.
Four corners. If you've got four quarters, how much do you have? You've got it all.
100%.
Got 100%. Okay. Gog and Magog is a reference that refers back to the enemies of God in Ezekiel 38 and 39. Now remember, as you study Ezekiel 38 and 39, that has been fulfilled. All right. It's not the same thing as that. We've got to say, okay, well, what's the reference referring to? So now, so he gathers these nations together for what purpose?
To battle.
To battle. He's going to overcome God. Okay? He's going to finally squelch the God that has imprisoned him for the 1,000 years. Okay? The God that has they've been fighting. Okay? He's bound. Okay? Satan's been bound. Still is bound. But at any rate, so he gathers them to battle. Do they have a large amount?
Yes.
Okay? What did they encompass?
Camp of the saints.
The what?
Camp of the saints.
The camp of the saints. Is camp a permanent destination? No. It's temporary. And the camp of the saints and what?
The beloved city.
The beloved city. I wonder what beloved city would be. Think. New Testament. What would the beloved city be referred to?
Jerusalem.
Okay. Is that a physical Jerusalem or a
spiritual?
Let's go to Galatians. And so that's, and I'm glad you brought it up that way, Bob, because I think that will help us to go to another passage. I didn't prepare this one. And is it a different Bible?
Is it 4:26?
4:26.
Of what?
And so Galatians chapter 4. Let's back up and get a Well, somebody read 26 and.
But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all.
I wonder what that's talking about.
Above?
Above?
Heaven?
If you read the context, it's talking about heaven. Now, there's a lot of confusion over the city, physical city of Jerusalem. We need to understand, and of course, as you look at the book of Galatians, the whole thing is talking about Ishmael and Isaac. Okay? How Ishmael was not the son of promise, and he was cast out. Isaac was the son of promise. As you read through chapter 4, you're going to learn that Ishmael is the Old Testament. It's done away with. The Old Jerusalem is gone. The New Jerusalem, the heaven above, okay, and the church, the New Testament that Jesus left for us, is the true. Right? And you'll see this, if you study this throughout the Old and bring it into the New, you're going to learn that the whole purpose was the church. Okay, and go back to the garden. Okay, he shall bruise his head and he shall bruise his heel. Alright, and so talking about Satan's death on the cross. And so the whole purpose from the very beginning is the church came. That was the eternal purpose of God in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 10 and 11.
Well, you're always talking about, what do you say, type and anti-type and how mm-hmm. they're symbols. Well, in the Old Testament, Jerusalem was the holy city. Mm-hmm. It was the only place of worship. Mm-hmm. It was the center of the throne of the kingdom. Mm-hmm. So it was the chosen people's meeting place. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's why it's such a good illustration to point us to heaven.
Yeah. And so there's trillions of dollars been spent to restore the city of Israel, of Jerusalem to Israel. That's all that comes from mistranslation of this passage, and it's a total misunderstanding. Okay? And it does not fit with Jesus' teaching. And so the Jerusalem which is above is the one that's the mother of us all. And that's heaven. Okay? And so be careful. I'll deal with some of the things about premillennialism, about a literal 1,000-year reign. But I think we've seen very clearly that can't fit within the pages of the New Testament and the book of Revelation. And so at any rate, so it's not, the beloved city isn't the physical Jerusalem, it's heavenly Jerusalem, okay? And so, now look at this again. He gathers them together, compass the camp of the saints and the beloved city, which is
heaven.
It's heaven. Okay?
So the camp of saints, is that literal?
I can't tell you for sure. Let me ask you this, and you might remember it. I've done some lessons on this. Where do the faithful go when they die?
Paradise.
It's a part of the Hadean realm. We see it in Luke 16, where the rich man, he's in torment.
Right.
He looks over the great gulf and he sees Lazarus, and he's in the bosom of Abraham. He's comforted. And he said, please go back and tell my family to not come to this place. Okay, so Hades, as we get into the latter part of here, we're going to learn that Hades is going to give up the dead which are in them at the judgment day. And so Hades is a temporary place. Okay, and so a camp is a temporary place. Is that possible? I think very likely. Because the beloved city is heaven, the New Jerusalem, which is above. And the departed saints are in the Hadean realm, in the side of paradise, of comfort. And so, also, Satan is released when the 1,000 years are expired, when they're over. Now, I want us to remember something, and I believe this is a very important point. And we've got to keep it in mind. We can get worried about a lot of issues that we have a hard time understanding. And I think that's why a lot of times people put misinterpretation on them. What is really important is that you follow the teachings of God. This has nothing to do with how we live today. Does that make sense? Because you and me are going to give an account for what we do. What we say and what we do on the day of judgment is the whole problem. So you make sure, not whether or not we thoroughly understand some of these details. It doesn't matter. All right? What matters is that we live and do the things that Jesus said now. Albert?
What's interesting is the word they use is they encompass it. It means he just surrounds it. It doesn't say he actually attacks it or anything else. And you go down further and it says God just destroys them.
Yeah.
There is no we're dying or anything again. It's just,
see, and that's the thing. That's the thing that is so misunderstood about some of these people that we like a horror movie and because it's exciting, right? People spend a lot of money. See, I think, in my opinion, it's, and maybe that's judging heart, but I think a lot of times people just like a following. And if you want a following, you teach this nonsense. Okay? And the whole point, and this is the point, there's no battle. They gather for battle. They've got a company of people or souls, whatever they are, the nations from the four quarters, and they are, their number is the sand of the sea. They encompass heaven. They encompass the camp of the saints. They're ready to do battle. Fire comes down, it's over. Do you see why we don't have a thing to worry about? That doesn't mean we won't have problems, okay? The problems are there. Jesus had problems. You think you're any better than Jesus? I would like to think that I could get by without him. But I can't. Because they gather for battle. And God sends fire and destroys them.
But there's no war.
There is no battle. There is no battle. And that's not what the doctrine of premillennialism teaches. That's pre-1,000-year reign. And so, but at any rate, keep that in mind. You know, and this thing of a rapture where a lot of people all of a sudden they disappear and their cars go into the ditch. Hey, look, it made for a good selling book. It made some people a lot of money.
Made some good movies.
And it made for some major depression in some people that we were trying to study with. I mean, they were basket case. Tell them to quit reading the nonsense. Makes for exciting movies and scripts to tantalize people and to keep them on the edge of their seat, but it doesn't make for Bible. It's not there. Okay? And so, so at any rate, so, fire comes down, it's over. Finished. No battle. So now, verse 10.
The devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever.
Sound kind of final, doesn't it? It seems that the beast and the false prophet don't come out at that particular time. I've never seen any significance, and if I don't find anything clear, I'm not going to try to make anything of it, because I haven't seen any connection with anything important in that they were still there. And they at that particular, it just looks like they never came out, but Satan did. And so, okay, so what happens when the fire comes down from God? Satan's what? It's what we just read. He's cast into the lake of fire. And what's going to happen forever and ever?
Torment.
Torment, day and night. Okay. All right, and so at any rate, so now let's go to verses, let's read 11, 12, and 13. Get a larger swath of verses, and we're about out of time. But
then I saw a great white throne, and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God. And books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books. The sea gave up the dead who were in it, and the death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them, and they were judged, each one according to his work.
Read it good and finish the chapter.
Then death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire.
Okay. All right, so now we're going to pick up there next week. And we finish the aspect of Satan, basically, and so now we're going to see the coming of the Lord and some of the things, and we'll go through and look at some of those details to kind of figure out what's going on. So we're out of time, though. All right, thanks, guys. Good class.